Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Really everything they wanted to do from the Kyrie Irving trade. They wanted to be able to stay a championship contender in the short term, and they got a guy in Isaiah Thomas they feel like can fill in the plug. Obviously, if he returns from this hip injury, be there for Kyrie. They got another wing that can save some minutes for LeBron James in his 15th season, and they got an asset in the future. Should LeBron leave in the summer of 2018, they have a number one pick, potentially number one pick in the entire draft, potentially. You have to add the context of LeBron James in the summer of 2018 will have a decision to make whether he's going to opt in to his contract for 2018-2019. If he decides to opt out and leaves the Cavs as a free agent, well, the Cavs franchise did their best to have a contingency plan in terms of another franchise reset.
This was the deal that Cleveland wanted all along. They wanted to do a trade with Boston because Boston had kind of the greatest variety of assets for them to pick from. They got help in the short term, the long term view with that 2018 Nets pick. Cleveland wanted initially a deal that would have included Jason Tatum. They weren't getting that from Boston. Cleveland started to realize waiting Boston out for that wasn't going to get him that, and they didn't have leverage elsewhere. They didn't have great offers anywhere else in the league.
Isaiah Thomas, when he gets again a series against Boston, if they play man dude, we saw how this dude can compartmentalize. We saw what happened, what he did when his sister passed away and how he just, like, took over a series. That's pain. What do you think he's going to do with anger?
You could not have gotten a better package. You went and got a guy that can do some of the things that Kyrie does on the offensive end. You went and got a guy that, for a stretch of the season last year, was the best closer in the game in the fourth quarter. It boils down to this. Is the gap between Isaiah Thomas and Kyrie Irving, Jay Crowder, the big fella, and potentially the number one pick? In that aspect, I look and say, well, the Cavs, you know, won the deal.
Well, I think Cleveland did an outstanding job to be able to get a great point guard in Isaiah Thomas, someone who can complement LeBron James, a very good 3-4 man in Jay Crowder, on a great contract, and then that first rounder, I think it puts them in great position to retain LeBron James, as well as they'll have a lot of options if James decides to go someplace else.
Right now, as of right now, the Celtics won this trade. I'm not talking about who the Nets pick may turn out to be. The answer is the Celtics, because if the history of the NBA has taught us anything in terms of trades, it's that the team that wins the trade is the team that gets the best player in the deal.
I don't think it's that simple. First of all, I'm thinking about the fact that Isaiah Thomas just had finished averaging nearly 29 points per game on better than 46% shooting. I'm thinking about the fact that he did that without the services of LeBron James. Now, Kyrie Irving is absolutely sensational, but in the same breath, the fact that Isaiah Thomas is the guy that's replacing him definitely can fill that void. Then you've got Jay Crowder, who's better than serviceable. He's better than average. He's a pretty damn good player.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
So what do you think of the blockbuster deal that came down last night? I can give you my answer in about four words.
Can you dig it?
Yeah, buddy. All things considered, that is how I'm going to grade the Kyrie Irving trade from the Cleveland Cavaliers, the defending Eastern Conference champions, 3 years running, to the Boston Celtics, the conference final challenger this past season, in exchange for Isaiah Thomas, Jay Crowder, a young big Zizic, whose name nobody is going to be able to pronounce, especially if it's not Zizic and it's Zizic. They talked about that a lot this morning. It kind of stuck with me on Mike and Mike. And an unprotected first-round pick that will almost guaranteed be a lottery pick because of the fact that it is the Brooklyn Nets who had the worst record in basketball last year. Yeah, that is an outstanding get for the Cleveland Cavaliers. Welcome to the extravaganza right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We are Toledo's sports leader. All eyes in the NBA are to the east of us right now. And sorry to the Pistons fans, but once again, not too much going on up there. The NBA regular season, of course, is still quite a ways off. We're still 2.5 weeks away from the start of the NFL season, for crying out loud. But my goodness, the NBA, by way of Cleveland, continues to dominate headlines. A blockbuster trade. Epic proportions. First time, I heard this stat this morning, first time that two players that averaged at least 25 points per game in a season were traded for one another the following year. Never happened before. That makes this an unqualified blockbuster. And now the question is who won the deal? Who won the trade? Who's got the better of things in the short run? Who's got the better of things in the long run? And what kind of an impact will this have on LeBron James' future? Is he now going to be potentially more likely to stay with the Cavaliers in Cleveland to make more runs at finals against Steph Curry, Kevin Durant, and the Beasts from the West? Here's my breakdown. When you look at this in a one-on-one kind of a capacity, I think it's very clear that the Celtics got the better of the deal. But that's only if you look at it in a one-on-one capacity. Kyrie Irving is a better player than Isaiah Thomas. Isaiah Thomas averaged about 28.9 points this past season. Kyrie Irving averaged about 25.6. Both had high assist totals. Kyrie a career high with about 6 assists a game. Kyrie is taller. Kyrie is longer. Kyrie is more diversified in his game. Kyrie has an incredible inside game, but a remarkably underrated outside stroke. Isaiah Thomas is a ridiculous whirling dervish. He is an explosive mighty mite, all 5'9" of him, whose primary part of his game is explosiveness and getting by guys. Not as much of a pure outside shooter as a Kyrie Irving. But Isaiah Thomas is also 3 years older than Kyrie Irving, which means Kyrie has a lot of years of extraordinary productivity, including his prime, still to come. That's right. At age 25, Kyrie Irving hasn't even hit his prime. Think about that for just a moment. Kyrie Irving has 3 years left on his deal. Although he can opt out after the third one, he has indicated, or at least his folks have, his handlers have, that he would be willing to sign a long-term deal extending with the Boston Celtics. Of course, depending upon what else the Celtics do. They have completely remade themselves up in the New England area. Only 4 players from the Celtics team that went to the conference finals against the Cavaliers last season remain. Only 4 players. Think about that. The Pistons know very well because they took one of them. Maybe their second best player. Maybe, certainly their second biggest scorer. But Boston has remade itself, and they are going to give Kyrie Irving a chance to be what he wanted to be. The man. That man. The first name on the marquee, not the second. Gordon Hayward will occupy the second name on the marquee and probably be very happy with that and probably be very, very good in that role. But they have a whole lot of other building pieces that they need to add in Boston. One-on-one, Boston got better. Boston won the trade because Kyrie is the best player. That's just it. He's the best player in the trade. And therefore, Boston wins in that from that standpoint. However, we cannot evaluate this trade in one-on-one, because it wasn't just man for man. It was man for 4 pieces, 4 assets. Isaiah Thomas, Jay Crowder, a Swiss Army knife of a player who's got one of the most team-friendly contracts in the National Basketball Association. A 13-14 point scorer, 6-7 rebounds per game guy, long, 6'6", but long defender who can really, really make waves on the wing for opponents, including opponents that play perhaps for the Golden State Warriors in a potential NBA Finals. Jay Crowder, we saw, can stroke the three to the tune of about 40%. He is a very, very valuable addition to this team. You also have to consider the young big, 20 years old, Zizic, if that's how it's going to be pronounced, then that's going to be butchered by a whole bunch of people for a very long time.
Including probably me on the upcoming SportsCenter.
Thank you, Kush. I'm sure you will. But you will not be alone. But he is going to be a future kind of an impact player. At least they hope he'll be an impact player. He is a future piece to the puzzle. He will not be an immediate part of any kind of a rotation. Even though at 6'11", he becomes the biggest player on the Cavs roster. They have only one true center. Well, I take that back because Kevin Love is 7 foot or 6'11", but he's a, you know, he's a wing player and a post player on offense, but he's not a post defender, certainly. Tristan Thompson's the only real post player at 6'9", so he becomes the biggest post type player that they have, but he's still more of a future kind of a prospect. And then, of course, the unprotected pick. All of those things added up make this a very different kind of a grade or an evaluation of who won or who lost for the Cavaliers. So I want to do, and aside from just this trade itself, this is what I found myself doing as I evaluated this last night and tried to make some notes for today. This is the way I kind of spelled it out. If you look at last year's conference championship team that lost to the Warriors in five games in the NBA Finals, missing from that roster now are going to be Kyrie Irving, the second best player on the team, Derek Williams, Deron Williams, and James Jones. Only two of those individuals played significant minutes. Kyrie Irving and Deron Williams, who spelled Kyrie Irving. Derek Williams got no significant minutes. James Jones is pretty much a coach on the bench. That's it. So what they've lost, what they have subtracted from the roster that went to the NBA Finals for the third straight year, the only guy really played significant minutes was Kyrie Irving and Deron Williams a little bit, but that's only in place of Kyrie. Added to the roster in their place are the following. Isaiah Thomas, 28.9 points per game score and the leading scorer in the NBA in the fourth quarter during the regular season, proved to be one of the great closers in the game in his breakout season. Isaiah Thomas, Jay Crowder, Derrick Rose, Jose Calderon, the big guy Zizic, and this is interesting because it's not confirmed, but virtually everybody who has ever watched basketball, and especially those who are reporters and analysts, are insisting that it is only a matter of time before the Chicago Bulls buy out Dwayne Wade, and Dwayne Wade is free to sign anywhere, and that he is going to be signing with the Cleveland Cavaliers. That is the belief that, I mean, like I said, almost everybody, it's almost like he's on the roster already. Greeny this morning was talking about it as if he was on the roster. Okay, so they have Wade. I mean, it's like it's a done deal. And, of course, Wade, being a two, but being an advanced years two, probably will not mind coming off of the bench behind a J.R. Smith, but he will provide some consistency if this happens and some production and some professionalism that sometimes the erratic, going off the handle kind of ways that J.R. Smith does, you know, that they will need. They will need that kind of steadying influence. But of those individuals, how many of them will play significant minutes? Isaiah Thomas will. Jay Crowder will. Derrick Rose will. Dwayne Wade, if it happens, probably will. Jose Calderon probably will not, but he will be an upgrade on that bench down toward the end of it. A big upgrade over some of the stuff that the Cavaliers had down there at the end of that bench last year. And then you still have Iman Shumpert. They still have Kyle Korver. So they have added some significant pieces that will play some significant minutes in place of really only one guy who played significant minutes for them this past season in going to the NBA Finals again, and that, of course, would be Kyrie. The reason I gave this a can you dig it at the top of the show is because the Cavaliers went into this Kyrie trade demand with two very important things that they had to do. They needed to get a star caliber player right now in order to keep this team a competitive contender for the Eastern Conference Championship and send LeBron back to the finals one more time before he bolts. And it is almost a foregone conclusion that he is going to bolt. More on that later. They needed a star caliber player to keep this thing afloat right now. And replacing Kyrie's 25 points a game with Isaiah Thomas's 28.9 points a game sounds like it's a pretty good way to do it with a viable player and Jay Crowder. But also, as we've talked about, the Cavaliers could not just go for broke right now. They had to get something in their package in exchange for an all-star, four-time all-star Kyrie Irving. They had to get something that is going to help them be relevant in the future, if not title contenders, but after LeBron leaves, something young and potentially terrific in order to keep things going and not to fall off of the cliff from NBA Finals, NBA Finals, NBA Finals, NBA Finals 4 years in a row to lottery team because you lost 60 games. They had to find a way to get a piece to build around for the future. And in getting that draft pick, the Nets' unprotected first-round draft pick next year, they achieved that too. They got players who can help them win the conference championship again in Thomas and Crowder, and they got young guys, including Zizic and a pick, which could help them, once LeBron leaves, still continue to grow around potentially Thomas if he signs on long term, along with Love, along with Smith, along with Crowder, who's going to be there for a while. They will have an opportunity then to draft a top five player in a draft that, by the way, again, most experts look at the 2018 NBA draft and they say loaded. So if you have a top five or six or seven pick, of course, if you go into the lottery, you have a chance of getting higher than that. If you have a top five, six, seven pick or higher, you are in a great position to get a great young player to merge in with these guys so it's not a fall off the cliff and have the worst roster in the league the way they did when LeBron left the first time around. So they did both of the things they needed to by the acquisitions of Thomas and Crowder and then Zizic and the draft pick. The trade looks spectacular, by the way, when viewed through the lens of the Indiana Pacers, because the Pacers got next to nothing for Paul George compared to what the Cavaliers got for Kyrie Irving. When you trade superstars and you look at what Indiana got and you look at what the Cavaliers got, my goodness, it looks even that much better. There's no question about that. But there are still a couple of factors. Number one, Isaiah Thomas's contract long term. What is it going to take to get him to sign on long term if you do indeed want to do that? If you don't, he's a one-year guy. And then you've got some questions. Did you really trade now Kyrie Irving long-term just for Jay Crowder, the pick, and Zizic? Long-term, that might not look very pretty. And you also have to wonder about this season for Thomas, considering the fact that he did indeed suffer a hip injury that kept him out of all but 1.5 games of the conference finals against the Cavs. He did not have surgery this offseason. He says he's rehabbing and it's going to be great. But Danny Ainge, the GM of the Celtics who made this deal with the Cavs, said he may not be ready to start the season, no matter which team he was playing for. So there are a lot of elements to break down here. I'm just scratching the surface of my own analysis. And better yet, I'm going to get the viewpoint of an expert, Rick Nolan, who is a long, long, long-time beat writer covering the Cleveland Cavaliers out of Cleveland. He will join us to break this down from his perspective, Cavs' perspective, Celtics' perspective, and more as we continue right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. And now, your Wild Wing Stat of the Day.
ESPN 106.5 The Ticket presents the Wild Stat of the Day, brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings, Wings, Beer, Sports.
The Wild Stat of the Day revolves around the huge NBA trade, no question about it. Features a couple of firsts. This is the first time a trade has been made involving players that played against each other in the previous season's conference finals. Irving and Thomas, also the first players ever to average 25-plus points one season and then be traded for one another the next. It's also the first time the number one overall pick in a draft class, Irving, was traded for the last player picked in the same class, Isaiah Thomas. There you go, 3-4-1. How about that? That's making the most out of your money. You get three Wild Stats of the Day for the price of one. Rick Nolan joins us next right here on The Ticket.
A France extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Everybody's got an opinion on who won the trade, the blockbuster that sends Kyrie Irving, a four-time All-Star, the second-best player on a championship team 2 years ago, the second-best player on a three-time conference championship team, to Boston for Isaiah Thomas, a scoring machine who led the league in fourth quarter scoring for a large part of last season. as well as Jay Crowder, the Swiss Army Knife swingman, a young 20-year-old big whose last name nobody's going to be able to pronounce, but I'm going to go with Zizits, and also a first-round unprotected draft pick from the Brooklyn Nets, which is guaranteed to be a lottery pick, and maybe even as high as a top two or three pick. Who won the trade? I gave you my outline. Now let's get that of Rick Nolan, longtime Cavaliers beat writer and a longtime friend of this show. And, Rick, thanks so much for the time, my friend. It's been too long. How are you?
I'm doing well. How have you been?
I'm good, man. You know, I mean, this NBA offseason, you haven't had much downtime, right? I mean, you're not going to games.
No.
But outside of the vacation you took, which we kind of joked about a little bit, but when you're on the – I mean, you've had a ton to write about in this NBA offseason, haven't you?
Yeah, I had like a little nice three-week respite, you know, heading into to last night. And I kind of prefer when these things just come out of nowhere and you don't have to write about rumors and talk for 4 days and it just gets out there and it gets done. And ironically, I mean, the trade that ultimately was made was one that I had heard nothing about prior to. I mean, there was a lot of rumors out there, but this wasn't one of them, to my knowledge. So it got out there, and then, you know, four hours later, even less, it was already being confirmed. So my first reaction was it was probably a pretty good deal for both teams. I understand why both teams did it. Who's going to be the winner, we can go into more depth on, but I think that'll be determined, you know, during the course of the season and even after the season.
Definitely.
You know, my number two thought was, oh my gosh, thank God. I always think of myself, if not first, at least second or third, Bob, and media day just got a whole less of a zoo. on the flip side, the opener, is going to be an even bigger circus now. So,
it will, but it won't be as big, I think, Rick, as maybe it could be or should be, because, and this is one of the elements about the winning of the trade, the health of Isaiah Thomas. Danny Ainge said something that was kind of cryptic, that it's not certain that Isaiah Thomas is going to be ready to start the season, whether he was a Celtic or a Cavalier, that hip he decided not to have in late July surgery on is going to be just, you know, rehab the old-fashioned way. And you know, it may or may well be that he's not available for the showdown against Kyrie and the Celtics in Game 1.
True. It's still going to be a circus because Kyrie's going to be in the opposing uniform.
Yeah.
So from that regard, zoo all the way. But, yeah, I actually saw a report out of Boston on Monday prior to the trade that said that Isaiah was still due to have another scan done on the hip prior to training camp. I know the Cavs are anxious to get him in here, get a physical done, and see exactly where he's at, and go from there. The truly, truly, truly crazy thing here would be that he comes in and completely flunks the physical, and the Cavs try to rescind the trade, but I don't see that happening because I think Boston would have had to have made them fully aware of his condition before this deal was consummated.
Sure.
So,
that's
it's going to be a
practice, right? That standard operating.
Yes.
In a case
and it rarely happens. But it has happened, but, I don't see it happening in this instance. So,
okay.
You know, I think, you know, we can talk about the trade. I don't know that I buy like, so many diehard Cavs fans do that the Cavs necessarily are better now than they were prior to this trade. I would argue that Kyrie, despite his faults, was still so talented and so capable of doing so many things offensively that at best they're close to as good as they were prior to the trade. Now things could change, you know. That pick is a huge, huge bargaining chip in a number of different ways. They could trade it, you know, during the course of the season, but if you're going to trade a potential number one or two or three pick in the entire draft, you're getting a pretty darn good player in return for that. They're not going to do what the Lane Bring Nets did and trade two picks that couldn't turn out to be back-to-back ones for Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett. And, you know, if you're a Nets fan right now, you got to be shaking your head, because that whole thing just unraveled that team, and they're still going downhill. So the other thing I think that kind of intrigues me, you know, we all know that LeBron and Isaiah are going to be in the final year of their contracts. Mm-hmm. Well, LeBron has two, but I refuse to even consider that second year, because the specter of looming free agency is going to be there throughout the course of this season, and I fully expect them to opt out. But, you know, say the Cavs win the East again and, you know, lose pretty decisively again to the Warriors. I think, you know, you're going to have an NBA draft then, less than a week prior to free agency begins. And, you know, if you want to look on the positive side for the Cavs, they could have added a high quality, talented rookie player with that pick. And maybe that's enough for LeBron and Isaiah to get together and say, hey, that's going to make us better. Maybe we stick around and try to take that one more step again the following season. So, I think that pick, you know, although it's not going to help them immediately, is a really, really big asset that could bring on some significant, key pieces either this season in a trade or next season in the actual draft. And I think that's something they haven't had much of, in the LeBron era. They've had to, you know, manufacture trades. Yeah, they've manufactured trades and got 36-year-olds on their last legs. So it's intriguing to me, finally to have that chip, and we'll see what they do with it.
You know what's interesting, Rick? We're talking to Rick Nolan, Cavaliers beat writer. What's interesting to me is I didn't see that pick as a, hey, maybe that's something they could use to find a way to keep LeBron around. And maybe this is just the cynic in me. But and I'm very cynical when it comes to LeBron James. He's given me no reason not to be. He continues to yank the Cavaliers and their fans around with what I'm going to do and what I'm not going to do. He won't commit long term. He makes people guess. Kyrie guessed he's leaving. And Kyrie didn't want to be left here by himself to try to play in his shadow, not making the finals, and then being, you know, ridiculed for, see, told you couldn't do it on your own. Without LeBron, you're nothing. He didn't want, you know, if he's going to play without LeBron next year, he wanted it to be on his terms, not left here after LeBron bolts. So I'm under the assumption that LeBron is going to leave at the end of the year. And what I thought was so great about this trade for the Cavaliers, and kudos to Kobe Altman for doing this, is that they needed something that was star caliber now to replace Kyrie to continue at least this season's chances of getting back to the finals. And I think they've done that with Thomas and Crowder. And they needed something young. Okay. So that when LeBron leaves, it isn't an empty cupboard the way it was in 2010, where it's the worst roster in basketball and 60 losses a season for the next 3 years. And the piece helps them do that. So they will still have some talented guys around and a young guy coming in after LeBron leaves next year. So I see that draft pick is very key to this trade as well, but for a different reason. Not necessarily because it's a chip you can use to keep LeBron, but it's your rebuilding insurance policy once LeBron bolts.
Well, I mean, I agree almost 100% with what you said, but it covers their bases both ways as well. It gives them a chance to show their best player that they have a chance to get better. And if he decides to leave anyway, then yeah, they're not completely empty now. We all know how well number one picks have worked out when LeBron wasn't here. They've had three since 2011, and none of them are in Cleveland.
Yeah, right.
Today.
Kyrie was the last one to leave. Wiggins, of course, is in Minnesota, and Kevin Love was responsible for that this year. And then, of course, Bennett is. I don't even think he's in this Canadian.
I have no idea where he is.
I'm sorry. YMCA Rec League someplace. I don't know.
Yeah, as far as I know, he's out of organized basketball
Basketball altogether. Just amazing. Let me go back to short term before we start talking about what that pick could be and all that stuff. Let's go back to this season. You said at the beginning of your commentary when we brought you in that it's kind of hard to evaluate this trade, and you don't know whether the Cavaliers are better now than they were yesterday. I don't want to just use yesterday. I just want to be in the off season. I did a little just kind of looking at the pluses and minuses from the roster that went to three straight NBA Finals. Missing from that roster this past season now is Kyrie, Derek Williams, Deron Williams, and James Jones. Those guys were all going to be gone or are gone. Only one of them really played.
And really, of those guys, only really Kyrie mattered.
Right. He's the only guy who played significant minutes was Kyrie. Now, coming in this offseason will be Isaiah Thomas, Jay Crowder, Derrick Rose, Jose Calderon, at minimum. And
Jeff Green. And Jeff Green. Don't forget Jeff Green. He's a very key.
I think at least three of those four, at least two of those, no, I think at least three of those four, Thomas, Crowder, and Rose, I don't know how many minutes Green will get or Calderon will get, but you're bringing on a lot of guys who are going to be big-time contributors in many more minutes than you lost from the roster in those four guys that I just mentioned, Kyrie, Derek, Deron, and James Jones. So to me,
right.
It's not just are they better because of the trade, but this overall off-season of acquisitions, I think they have upgraded their roster in a big way despite the loss of a superstar like Kyrie.
Yeah, I think Calderon will be out of here fairly quickly.
Okay.
If you count Kay Felder, they have four point guards, which is at least one too many.
I don't count him, but I get your point.
I don't either, but I think Calderon, Kay Felder is going to bring you nothing in return. And if my count is correct, they have 17 players
yes.
under contract, which is two over the max. So they're going to have to find a way to move some guys for some picks or try to make a trade where they have, you know, trade two guys for one or three guys for two to reduce their roster. You know, they have a glut as well at the swingman spot between shooting guards and small forwards. I just got done typing all the names in and I'm away from my desk, but I mean, there's like eight guys there at that spot. Now, ideally, they can find somebody to take Iman Shumpert off their hands and perhaps get something, you know, throw another player in, or even get a pick in return because they got to get rid of two guys one way or another. You know, you're not going to. You could get something for Chetty Osman, but you're not going to get much because he hasn't played an NBA game yet. So, it's going to be interesting. They have some things they can do, but I don't think it's going to be anything overly significant with those guys. But you are right. Their bench went from a lot of guys who were just cheerleading to a lot of guys who are capable of being in rotations for the majority of teams in the league. So
agreed.
That's a plus. Now, you know, they have to figure out who those guys are going to be on a nightly basis and tighten it up. There's going to be some unhappy guys. I look at the roster and do you see any way Richard Jefferson can play this season?
No, not at all. Richard Jones is going to be like James Jones. Yeah, I think he's probably – didn't he try to retire after the championship year anyway?
Yeah, and then he ultimately signed for multiple years, which he played that out well to get another deal. Maybe they can buy him out. Maybe he'll just retire, although I don't see anybody just merely giving away money in this league. You know, if you want to look real long term, Dwayne Wade's probably going to get bought out.
I was waiting for you to break your thoughts so I could ask you that because virtually every NBA national analyst is saying. And by the way, here's three headlines just right across the front of my screen when I type in the words Dwayne Wade. Report, young Bulls players fed up with Dwayne Wade, buyout inevitable. Dwayne Wade reportedly expected to join Cavaliers at some point this season, and Dwayne Wade's Bulls teammates reportedly cannot stand him. So, roster you're talking about is going to have to shrink more because they're going to have
right.
to make room for Dwayne Wade.
Right, and let me ask you this. If Dwayne Wade does come here, does that increase the chances that LeBron is staying beyond this year, or does that mean they're just going to try one time and LeBron's going to pull.
Rick, I say one time, only because Dwayne Wade just isn't LeBron in terms of how he's aging. I don't think the Cavaliers would offer him a 2 or 3 year deal beyond this year in order to stay.
No.
Which, of course, it would have to be if LeBron wanted to play with him, and he would have to sign the same kind of thing. LeBron, yeah, of course. Look at his body. Look at his game shape.
Right.
Look at the way he is at his age. But Dwayne's 35 and perhaps plays a little older than that right now, so I can't see it being much more than a one-year deal.
No, and he can actually benefit himself financially by keeping it to a one-year deal and then trying to get something again next summer. But I don't know, quite frankly, how many more years he has left. I think he still averaged 18 points a game last year. But,
yeah, 18 points on 43% shooting. So
yeah, it's a pretty misleading 18. And
Derrick Rose,
he really,
what do you – you know, let's get back to
yeah,
the
it's another tough
to
one.
Guys here, because Isaiah Thomas is supposed to be the starter, but we mentioned the hip. And we don't know exactly what, you know, what the situation is going to be. We can assume that he'll be 100%, if not for the start of the season, shortly thereafter. While he's out, Derrick Rose now is your point guard. He also averaged about 18 points a game this past season, was never really considered to be what he was when he was the MVP of the league, which he never should have been, but anyway. You know, but he's a guy who put up some decent numbers at a better shooting percentage than I think we just got from Wade. So you got a couple of, you know, veteran star caliber players who are going to be asked to play different types of roles. Rose is the same age as Isaiah, but he would clearly be his backup. They're both 28
right.
years old. So how do you think all of that is going to mesh?
I have no idea. And that's what's going to make, you know,
good
a
luck,
couple
Ty,
of the
dude.
First few weeks of the regular show. I mean, you know, Derrick Rose, you know, the numbers, again, they look pretty good on paper, but I'm always leery of guys who put up stats on lousy teams. Because so many of the numbers are hollow.
Garbage time numbers, and you're getting blown out.
Yeah, there are 8 points in the fourth quarter of a 14-point game where it's still close enough for you to play, but it's not like, you know, you really ever have a chance of winning the game, and you know, you're able to pad him. He could still be decent. He's, again, a far cry from the player he used to be. The explosiveness isn't there like it used to be. I don't know how they're going to use him. Like you said, Isaiah is definitely the starter if he's healthy. Rose is a very viable option if he's not. I don't, you know, I've heard some people say maybe you can play them together. That's a lot of guys on the floor who like to dribble the ball a lot.
Yeah, it is, isn't it?
I mean, you're basically playing with three ball dominators then, and I don't know how that works, and I'm not real convinced Derrick Rose can be a real effective off the ball catch and shoot, move without the ball type of guy.
No.
His whole life he's played with it, as has Isaiah and as has LeBron.
I'm going to pencil him in as the backup. He's going to not get.
I think there's no question.
He's going to be behind Isaiah, which brings us to this
next
part, Rick. And I apologize, but we're just short on time, so we got to cram all these questions in real quick. Isaiah, 28.9 points a game. He was the first option in Boston, and we always have to talk about how well a guy adjusts to being the first option or going from the first option to the second or third. He's going to a team with two 20-point-plus scorers, two multi-time All-Stars, talking about LeBron and Kevin Love. Love seemed to adjust to being the third wheel with Kyrie there, and he'll just wait for the times they find him in the corner to shoot and all of that sort of thing. But how does Isaiah adjust to being that second man now and deferring everything to LeBron James, something he's never been asked to do before? Kyrie had 3 years to kind of get used to that.
Right, and it didn't happen for Kyrie right away either, and I think we may have an appreciation of just how difficult that is to do. You know, for all LeBron's greatness and ability to make, you know, marginal or one-dimensional players better for all the things he can do, it's not always easy to be another star player and play with him because, you know, he's Superman, and you're going to be the second guy. And you have to learn how to maintain your confidence and your aggressiveness but still fit into what he wants you to do, because if he's unhappy, you're not going to be happy for very long. So it will be interesting. Isaiah's, you know, he's been a he probably has the ball in his hands as much as any player in the league. I didn't look up the user stats for that, but you know, you're talking about a guy who leads the break, dribbles the bulk of the offense, and either creates his own or passes to a guy who often shoots right away or one more swing pass. And I he's going to have to learn that there's going to be plenty of times where he's going to have to stand off on the wing while LeBron does his thing. It's not easy. It's more difficult, I think, than the casual fan realizes, that when you've done one thing all your life and then suddenly you're still asked to do it, but not nearly as much. It's sometimes hard to draw that line, and he's going to have to learn and learn pretty quickly.
Rick Nolan breaking down the trade for us right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Rick, so many levels there, so many layers to peel back. We only just scratched the surface, but I appreciate you doing it on short notice like this. There'll be time more to evaluate this, especially when we get a physical report on Isaiah Thomas from the Cavaliers,
right,
doctors and
right
players. And you know, as we get closer to the season, we'll analyze this. And once the roster moves are made, as you said, they got to pair a bunch of guys off of this. They got to chop some guys. We'll analyze that some more. So we look forward to catching up with you then. Rick, thanks so much for the time.
All right, anytime.
You got it. All right, hour number two is coming up. And before we get to hour number two, let me remind you about what to do in hour number two. Because happy hour is going on right now from 3 o'clock to 6 o'clock at Don Juan Mexican Bar and Grill. The brand new location is at the Franklin Park Mall. It's all brand new inside. Bar, booths, tables, chairs, all of it. The authentic Mexican feel, the authentic Mexican taste. Comfy lounge to kick back and have a few drinks before you sit down for dinner. And happy hour. I know what's going on right now because it's a day that ends in Y. That's right. The happy hours at Don Juan Mexican Bar and Grill are limited to days that end in Y from 3 to 6 p.m. That's all of them if you're scoring at home. 7 days a week with insane drink specials, plus Taco Tuesdays. Tacos are just a dollar. You got to get out and check it out. Don't forget, the original location for Don Juan is in Maumee on Dussel Drive, but this new location is at Franklin Park, not in the food court. You got to go in on the Monroe Street side between JCPenney and Dillard's, directly across from Nick and Jimmy's. You are going to love it. It's Don Juan Mexican Bar and Grill, now at the Franklin Park Mall. And we've got hour number two, more analysis of the trade with you. We are guest-free the second hour, so just me and you and Kush, and we'll kick it around together and tell me, and by the way, a starting quarterback situation is developing as well. We'll get into that story as well as we continue hour two right here on ESPN 106.5.
They feel like they accomplished really everything they wanted to do from the Kyrie Irving trade. They wanted to be able to stay a championship contender in the short term, and they got a guy in Isaiah Thomas they feel like can fill in the plug. Obviously, if he returns from this hip injury, be there for Kyrie. They got another wing that can save some minutes for LeBron James in his 15th season, and they got an asset in the future. Should LeBron leave in the summer of 2018, they have a number one pick, potentially number one pick in the entire draft, potentially. You have to add the context of LeBron James in the summer of 2018 will have a decision to make whether he's going to opt in to his contract for 2018-2019. If he decides to opt out and leaves the Cavs as a free agent, well, the Cavs franchise did their best to have a contingency plan in terms of another franchise reset.
This was the deal that Cleveland wanted all along. They wanted to do a trade with Boston because Boston had kind of the greatest variety of assets for them to pick from. They got help in the short term, the long-term view with that 2018 Nets pick. Cleveland wanted initially a deal that would have included Jason Tatum. They weren't getting that from Boston. Cleveland started to realize waiting Boston out for that wasn't going to get him that, and they didn't have leverage elsewhere. They didn't have great offers anywhere else in the league.
Isaiah Thomas, when he gets again a series against Boston, if they play man dude, we saw how this dude can compartmentalize. We saw what happened, what he did when his sister passed away and how he just, like, took over a series. That's pain. What do you think he's going to do with anger?
You could not have gotten a better package. You went and got a guy that can do some of the things that Kyrie does on the offensive end. You went and got a guy that for a stretch of the season last year was the best closer in the game in the fourth quarter. It boils down to this. Is the gap between Isaiah Thomas and Kyrie Irving, Jay Crowder, the big fella, and potentially the number one pick? In that aspect, I look and say, well, the Cavs, you know, won the deal.
Well, I think Cleveland did an outstanding job to be able to get a great point guard in Isaiah Thomas, someone who can complement LeBron James, a very good 3-4 man in Jay Crowder on a great contract, and then that first rounder, I think it puts them in great position to retain LeBron James, as well as they'll have a lot of options if James decides to go someplace else.
Right now, as of right now, the Celtics won this trade. I'm not talking about who the Nets pick may turn out to be. The answer is the Celtics, because if the history of the NBA has taught us anything in terms of trades, it's that the team that wins the trade is the team that gets the best player in the deal.
I don't think it's that simple. First of all, I'm thinking about the fact that Isaiah Thomas just had finished averaging nearly 29 points per game on better than 46% shooting. I'm thinking about the fact that he did that without the services of LeBron James. Now, Kyrie Irving is absolutely sensational, but in the same breath, the fact that Isaiah Thomas is the guy that's replacing him definitely can fill that void. Then you've got Jay Crowder, who's better than serviceable. He's better than average. He's a pretty damn good player.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
I concur. He is all of those things. Jay Crowder is not a minor part of this trade. He might be because his name is third on the list of, you know, players who have been 25-point scorers or all-stars or that sort of thing. But Jay Crowder is a big, big piece of the deal that the Cavaliers made yesterday with the Boston Celtics in finally moving Kyrie Irving. Cushlin, you've been silent for that first hour, mostly because I monologued and had a guest, but how surprised were you to see, you know, just what, Monday? We were talking about how the reason there has been very little to no movement on the Cavaliers' front in the move to trade Kyrie Irving, honoring his trade request, is because the Cavs were insistent upon finding a way to get something not just for the now, but for the tomorrow, for the future, so that if and when LeBron leaves, and Kyrie will have been gone, they will not have the worst roster in basketball. And we kind of thought that might take a while, and then just, you know, blink, go to sleep for a little while, and you wake up, and hey, Kyrie's been traded to the Celtics.
Yeah, and the way it's been going down these last couple of weeks, I was starting to think that maybe these guys are talking about they might be starting camp together. Can they work this out? I was starting to think that that's becoming a possibility, though now here we are on August 23rd, right about the exact same time back in 2014 when LeBron came back, and then you had the Kevin Love Wiggins deal. That was right about this type of time, if you recall. That was a late August type of thing. And as I've been stewing over this and looking at the roster and how all these pieces fit together, because, you know, as Rick Nolan last segment pointed out, yeah, the roster now stands at 17. So two of these guys, by just roster legality, have to be cut loose. I think it's going to be Felder and Tavares personally on that, but we'll see. And
somebody else to go as soon as the Dwayne Wade thing happens, because I totally agree with what Rick said and
yeah.
Somebody
oh,
else
totally.
Said that he's going to get bought out. There's no way he plays this season in Chicago. No way.
No, I agree.
They don't like him. They don't want him. It's pointless because they're going to be probably the worst or second to worst team in the East, maybe with the Nets or the Knicks or somebody like that.
Yeah.
And why would he want to spend this year there anyway?
Right. And on top of that, too, you know, we're about 2 months from right now, everybody will be playing their first games, a couple of games, because they're, you know, they moved their regular season starting point back a little bit. So we'll be a couple of games into everybody's NBA season. And, yeah, with all that talk, it feels to me like if you're Chicago, you want to try to get that buyout. Kind of like Kyrie with this trade and the Cavs. You want to try to get that buyout if you're Chicago before the season starts, preferably before camp starts if you can. I'm still not sure if it's going to work out that way. But again, back to this whole thing. First of all, 866-240-1065, you feel like calling me a flaming hypocrite on this one, because I'm the one who said when all these Kyrie wants to be traded stories first came out about a month ago, you know, I'll be the first one to admit, yeah, I'm the one who said the only team I don't want to trade Kyrie to is Boston, even though you'd probably net Isaiah Thomas in return, because that's your chief rival. Yet not even 24 hours after this deal is completed. It really, when you think about it, that was one of the better deals because of some of those assets that they could get. Remember, a lot of rumors were about Phoenix, but they didn't want to give up Jackson, I think it was, for example. Where Boston, it seemed like the biggest thing you had to try to pry was to get that pick unprotected or one of those other very young players. Either option is fine with me because, again, they've tried their best to kill two birds with one stone here. Do something for right now, because despite all these rumors and everything and all the talk that we're going to be inundated with during the season about LeBron leaving for L.A. or who knows wherever else, you still have a window of just this one more year, and you have to do everything you can to make sure you're right back in the finals. At the same token, you still have to kind of play under the assumption that LeBron is gone. That's why guys like Thomas and Derrick Rose, for that matter, being free agents after this year, don't bother me a whole lot. Because as you guys pointed out, you and Rick Nolan, Crowder's here for 3 years. Zizic is a rookie, so he's on a rookie deal. You got a cheap deal there for a couple of years. I think it's 4 and then an option. And then you got that number one pick, which, because I don't think they'll be as bad, but they'll still be top 7 pick in the lottery, probably bad. Brooklyn Nets pick, that's something they didn't have. That's something they didn't have in 2010. And that's part of what we've been saying this whole time. If you're Dan Gilbert, you have to do everything in your power to make sure this is not a 65 loss team for 2018, 2019. Even if in this coming offseason you may have to then unload Kevin Love for more younger guys after a LeBron leaves, at least you have a couple of theoretical pieces in place to start a rebuild on, and you shouldn't dip, you know, that low into obscurity again. It'll still be painful, obviously, when that happens, but at least you have some insurance the way they didn't in, say, 2010.
All right, so in other words, you agree with everything I said.
I'm really liking this more and more. Basically, for me, it's despite my talk earlier this summer of don't trade him to Boston, as I've been sifting this in my...
But the truth of the matter about that, let me address that.
Okay.
Because the truth of the matter to me is that doesn't matter now. It really doesn't, and here's why. Nothing has changed, despite the uniforms being changed of some of the guys on the two top teams in the conference. Nothing has changed in terms of who is expected to win the conference. The Cavaliers will still be expected to win the conference because of LeBron James. He will be favored over Boston, even Boston having Kyrie,
sure,
because it wasn't Kyrie being added to an existing Boston team that took them to, what, 5 games in the NBA Eastern Conference Finals, right?
Right, it was 5 games, should have been a sweep.
It wasn't like Kyrie was added to that team. Kyrie was added to that team as it lost Isaiah Thomas in his 28 points a game and Jay Crowder, who is a huge, huge part of who they are and what they do offensively and defensively. So to me, nothing has changed in terms of the pecking order. Vegas will still see the Cavaliers as a prohibitive favorite to win the Eastern Conference over Boston. So for now, it's irrelevant that you traded your second best player to your biggest rival because you didn't strengthen them,
right,
as much as, you know, in terms of like closing the gap, as much as you did just swap talent with them. Secondly, this team, this Boston team, as I said at the top of the show, is in no way, shape, or form the same team that went to the conference finals.
Mm-hmm.
They have 4 players remaining from their 12-player active roster in the postseason.
That's astonishing for a team that went to a conference final.
Exactly.
For that kind of turnover.
They essentially rebuilt on the fly here.
Yep.
And, you know, they added Gordon Hayward, which is a great get. He's an all-star 20-plus point scorer. Great, great complimentary guy to a guy who now becomes the Batman, if you will, which is Kyrie Irving, who's only going to get better. If you think you've seen the best of Kyrie Irving when he hit that dagger 3 that won them a championship 2 years ago, you're wrong. He's 25. He has not even hit his prime. His prime comes next year, maybe when he turns 27, and lasts until he's about 32. His prime is still to come. He's still a baby. Athletically, he's a marvel. Mentally, he's even better. He's smart. His basketball IQ is through the roof. He learned so much from playing with LeBron James. People say, and I want to be clear about this, people say, Kyrie Irving has not proven that he can be a Batman. Why does he want to go somewhere else to be the big dog? He's a much better Robin than he is a Batman. Look at what it was like in Cleveland when he was there for the first three or four years, when he was the Batman, when he was the big guy. They were terrible. Worst record in the league, blah, blah, blah. Well, number one, he was playing literally with the worst supporting cast, the worst roster in basketball for that period of time after LeBron James left. Number two, he himself was 19 years old when he came into the league, and then 20 and then 21. He was nowhere near the experienced, learned, high IQ, and, of course, physically gifted basketball player that he is today at the age of 25. You put him on a roster that has pieces that are way better than what he had his first time around with the Cavaliers. And I firmly believe that Kyrie Irving can, A, win an MVP in this league, and B, can win a championship. Now, maybe not right away, because Boston, again, with only four guys returning, and now Kyrie, of course, being added to that group, they've got to fill out about six or seven guys on that roster to make it a somewhat of a, you know, of a potentially championship contending team or conference final contending team. And the Warriors are still the Warriors for the next several years that they continue to keep that core together. So I'm not suggesting that he will win a championship with Boston, but Kyrie Irving has the ability to be an MVP in this league every bit as much as Russell Westbrook and Steph Curry, two other point guards who are scorers, has done. He is capable of doing that, and he is capable of winning a championship. So long run, it may turn out that the Celtics got the better of the deal. If Isaiah Thomas at 5'9", especially if his hip is an issue going forward, if his hip is an issue, they probably wouldn't give him a long-term contract to keep him there anyway. Or if his hip is fine and he just wants a max deal that the Cavs don't want to give him for a 5'9" point guard, then the Cavaliers, for the long run, have traded Kyrie Irving, a potential MVP and NBA champion, for Jay Crowder and for the big rookie Zizic and for a draft pick. And if that's the case, you never know what those draft picks are going to be.
Sure.
Absolutely not. If you look at just the number one overall picks, let alone first round picks, and you and I did this,
Jim, yeah, we did like a full 15, hour on this not too long ago.
Yeah. There are 1,000 times more misses than there are hits.
Oh yeah.
On first round draft picks anyway. So if the Cavaliers don't hit on whoever that pick is going to be that they got from the Celtics or from the Nets by way of the Celtics in this trade, then it's for Jay Crowder and Zizic for Kyrie Irving. And in the long run, it's a steal for the Celtics. But for this season alone, nothing changes. The Cavaliers will slide Isaiah into Kyrie's role. They'll probably give more minutes to Derrick Rose than they would have with Kyrie in front of him. They'll have Jay Crowder to be a very, very effective wing defender and a reliable scorer, too, because he can do it. He can put up 14, 15 points.
Oh, yeah.
And perhaps more consistently than you can get from J.R. Smith, who scores his 15 points a game by way of 25 one night and 5 the next.
And side note
because
there.
Because he's ice cold in one of the games right. And he's red hot in another.
And that's just J.R. And side note, when it comes to J.R. and Crowder, I hope they've already put their differences behind them. Let's just say, since they're now in the same locker room.
Sure.
Remember, it was
I'm
the
sure
two of them back in the 15 playoffs that were going at it in that game four.
But just looking at it, like I said, from a production standpoint, and so nothing changes. The Cavaliers will be the favorite. If they meet the Celtics in the conference finals, they will beat the Celtics in the conference finals. It will be extraordinary to see Kyrie Irving going head-to-head with Isaiah Thomas or Derrick Rose or whoever is trying to guard him in a Cavaliers jersey. It'll be weird on opening night when that happens, that Kyrie Irving will be playing against the Cavaliers. So,
which, by the way, is Boston's only regular season trip to Cleveland, by the
right?
by.
The
yeah.
Night, the only
they
one.
Only play three times. The other two are in Boston, opening night of the season in Cleveland.
So to me, you know, nothing will really change. The Cavaliers will win the conference. LeBron will see to that. And so for the short term, to me, it's not a loss for the Cavs. it could be a huge win for the Cavs, but it also could end up, depending on where Isaiah Thomas is long-term, and if Kyrie re-signs with the Celtics after his next 2 years, that Kyrie and the Celtics run away with that deal.
Yeah, and then another point for this year on the Cavs side of things is that their chief competitor, Boston, and again, when I said that earlier in the summer, you know, I also wasn't factoring in that 11 of the 15 players from last year's Celtics roster would no longer be on the roster. You know, I didn't think it would get to that high of a number, but as the last bunch of weeks have gone by, it obviously has. So, you know, that's going to take maybe a month, maybe until around Thanksgiving, just to really start getting a true feel for each other, the way they have a team would have to do, as it's basically a brand new team. And it was all sorts of talk, and most of it very legitimate, about how good of a coach Brad Stevens is. Well, this is going to be a real test of that coaching ability for him, because the last year especially, but the last couple of years, it's been a role player, get effort, a little defense out of him. Now with Kyrie and Gordon Hayward leading the way, and some of those good defenders like Crowder, now a Cavalier, Avery Bradley, now a Detroit Piston, he's going to have to recalibrate some of his system because it's more offensive than defensive. So it's going to take about a month for that team to probably start gelling at all,
maybe more. Yeah, no doubt about it. 866-240-1065. Terry is in Toledo. Wants to weigh in on the big blockbuster trade yesterday. Cavaliers and Celtics finally pulled it off. Terry, go ahead.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good, man. What's up?
Great. You know, I was astonished that this trade was made. You know, if Isaiah Thomas, if he's injured, that kind of changes things. But I think the Cavs got a complete steal here, man. I think this was a horrible move for the Celtics. I mean, you know, you lose two key pieces. You want to build a team around Kyrie Irving. I mean, Kyrie Irving is going to find out he is just simply not the all-around player on both ends of the court that LeBron is. I mean, defensively, you can't build a team around Kyrie Irving. And I think that this was a complete steal for the Cavs. I mean, and the Cavs were desperate, and, you know, Boston took the bait. I mean, this, to me, I think this is going to turn out to be, Danny Ainge might lose his job over this. I mean, this was a horrible move. So I'm a big LeBron fan, so I was shocked, man. I think in the long run, Cleveland's a better team now.
Do you think this trade, speaking to LeBron since you brought him up, do you think this trade makes him any more likely to re-sign and stay?
He's going to wait till the end of the year. He's going to see what happens, you know, what type of pick they have in the 18 draft. And this definitely increases the likelihood that there's a chance that he'll stay. There's no guarantee he will. He's going to play his card out next year. But, you know, for the Cavaliers to be this dysfunctional, to get rid of their GM, the Cavaliers, Dan Gilbert is dysfunctional of an owner as he is, he still puts people in positions to make good decisions. This decision right here really saved the Cavaliers, you know what. I mean, I was just thrilled with this trade, and I'm thrilled because I can't stand the Celtics. I think that to build a team around Kyrie Irving is foolish, man. He's just not the all-around player that LeBron is. So Kyrie Irving may never get to the final. I mean, he should have stuck with LeBron. This is a career move. This is a career killer for him, man.
Yeah, I 100% disagree with that because LeBron's okay. Gone. I disagree with you on the part about what I'm not saying. LeBron may do what you said and look and see what the 18 pick looks like and blah, blah, blah. But I firmly believe he doesn't want to play for Dan Gilbert anymore. He doesn't want to be in Northeast Ohio anymore. He doesn't feel like he owes him anything. He delivered the championship he said he would. And he wants to go somewhere bigger, brighter, better. And he's also tired of going to the finals from the East every year. And then you got to lose to the Warriors, and then you end up having that legacy chip. Well, he's 3-5.
He's probably going to go out to the West Coast. I didn't say that I think LeBron will stay.
I'm making a point about Kyrie. My point to that was, if you're Kyrie, okay. And already people are saying about you what I said. They said when LeBron left and Kyrie was number one overall pick, and they suck. They had the worst record in basketball, so he obviously can't lead a team. If that's what you've endured, and now LeBron comes and you guys team up and you win a championship and you go to three straight finals, and this year would be a fourth straight final, and then LeBron leaves, which I expect he will, and Kyrie expects he will, okay? And now Kyrie stays here, and he's the focal point, and they don't go to the finals. If they don't go to the finals, what will critics say about Kyrie? They'll say, "See, he was just a product of LeBron. He's squashed."
And I think that,
LeBron.
But the thing is this: why are
that. Hold on? But do you would you want that to be your legacy? That I'm the guy who the lead guy who was still in town after LeBron left, and I couldn't carry us the way he carried us. He doesn't want that, so that's why he wanted to go somewhere fresh and start his own, you know, his own legacy, where he won't be in LeBron James' shadow.
See, that's the problem with these young guys now. This is a different generation. These young guys care about their legacy, and the old school guys cared about winning. And I think that Kyrie is listening to the wrong people, and he thinks he's the centerpiece of a team, and he's not. And I think that that's going to hurt him. And to me, this was a bad decision for Kyrie.
Well, what about it being different today than it was old school? But you could say the same thing about LeBron, because when LeBron's not old school either. LeBron bailed out on Cleveland and went to play with Wade and Bosch and rent a championship, something old school guys like Bird and Magic and Gervin and Robinson and all these guys never would have thought about doing. So, you know, that nobody's you're right, it's a new generation, and they want to chase championships the easiest way they can. Play with my buddies, form a super team, win a championship, instead of fighting through and winning the championship in the city that drafted you.
Well, we'll see what happens, man. I'm thrilled with the trade. Go Cavs.
Terry, I appreciate it, brother. Good call. You make a lot of really great points. Really great points. I'm not as convinced that this is the greatest thing ever, because I don't know about Isaiah Thomas's hip, number one. But I started the show by playing Can You Dig It? I said, this is my response to the trade. My response to the trade right now is, can you dig it? Because, obviously, the Cavaliers were in a position of non-strength. Is that I'm trying to say they were not negotiating from a position of strength.
There you go.
Because Kyrie demanded the trade. So if you're another GM and you see all of the social media that shows that Kyrie and LeBron are really, really antagonistic toward one another, every sign that you got pointed to total dysfunction between Cleveland and or among Cleveland players, between Kyrie and LeBron, which indicated they cannot possibly keep them together. And every day that went on, that there were more signs of that, every GM probably got a little bit tighter with his purse strings, meaning the assets that he could spend, not money, but players. I'm not giving up the ship for Kyrie. They have to get rid of him. They got to come to us now. He's got to come to me. And what the Cavaliers are going to get for Kyrie is going to be similar to what Indiana got for Paul George, which is next to nothing, because we have the power here. They can't keep those two guys together. No way. So we have the power here. So with that being the backdrop of this deal, it was a steal for the Cavs. It was a steal to get an all-star 28.9-point player like Isaiah Thomas, who plays the same damn position of the guy that you're trading. It was a steal to get Jay Crowder, a young 6'6" wingman who can defend, who can board, who can score a little bit, and has a tremendously friendly contract for the team. Remember, Dan Gilbert saves 20-some million dollars in salary that he has to pay.
Don't for a moment, guys, think that's not a big deal in all this.
It's a huge deal. Huge deal, because he has gone so far into the luxury tax to please LeBron James since he came back, because he promised he would. This is a big break for him. And then, of course, again, if LeBron leaves, what do I have to build around for the future? Oh, look at this, an unprotected first-round draft pick of one of the worst teams in the league, guaranteed to be in the lottery. We'll see how the balls bounce as to whether or not it's in the top one, two, or three. That's a damn steal. I agree. That's why Can You Dig It id the start of the show, and I agree with Terry. From that vantage point, where I disagree with Terry is long term. He says Kyrie's going to regret this day because he's never going to be the guy. I disagree. Russell Westbrook won an MVP being that kind of a guy. Steph Curry won two MVPs and a championship, two championships technically, being that kind of a player. I firmly believe that Kyrie Irving is a top six or seven or eight player in this league. And I believe that free of the constraints of being the second banana to LeBron, he can win an MVP like those guys. He can be an all-timer. And, yes, he can win a championship. You give him the right supporting parts like every star needs. How did Steph Curry win his first one, being a 6'3", shooting first point guard? How did he win a championship? Well, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green. The correct and perfect supporting parts around him. That's how he won a championship. Then, of course, now you add Kevin Durant, it's an entirely different ballgame. Kevin Durant is the driving force there, and Curry is along for the ride. But the point is, he did that. You can win a championship as a score-first point guard, and you can certainly win MVPs. And if you're looking to achieve the best you can for your career, especially if you've already gotten a ring, which Kyrie does with the Cavaliers, I see nothing wrong with pursuing all of your own personal goals, winning a championship as the main guy, not the sidekick, winning an MVP the way other guys just like me have. Cush, you remembered I talked about this at the time Kyrie announced his trade. It's entirely possible that he looked at and listened to every NBA analyst who sized up the matchup in the NBA Finals, the man for man. It's LeBron versus Kevin Durant at the three. And you go through all of this. Draymond Green versus Kevin Love at the four. Klay Thompson and J.R. Smith. Well, the point guard battle, Kyrie Irving versus Steph Curry, was almost considered a wash by everybody. Both of them, the top two sets of handles in the league. Two of the best pure outside shooters in the league. Two guys a little challenged on defense from time to time who are going to have to be covered for. But they were considered to be a wash. I firmly believe that Kyrie Irving read that, heard that, listened and saw that, and said, well, if I'm just as good as that guy, and he's got two MVPs and a championship, this is going into the finals, of course, which is the second championship, you know, he might be thinking, well, damn it, I can do that too. I'm just as good as him. And I believe he feels like he's probably better than Curry overall. And so, you know, if Steph is getting all of this love and creating this legacy as a champion and an MVP, Irving probably figures, me too, and I'll never get there, being in LeBron James' shadow. So why not strike out and try to carve your own path?
And, you know,
I will never denigrate somebody's taking on a challenge. Not talking about being greedy for the sake of greed, but taking, you know, like when somebody takes a, you know, Carmelo Anthony going to the Knicks. That wasn't taking on a challenge of lifting the moribund Knicks franchise to something higher and bigger than they were because they sucked. He wanted the money and it was home to him. If you take a contract from a crappy team just because it's the most money, I don't give you credit for trying to lift that team and take on a challenge. That's greed. But when you are doing it for the purposes of winning a championship and expanding your own legacy in the annals of basketball, because you're one of the all-timers of your generation, which Kyrie Irving very well could be, you know, talk to me in 10 years when he's 35. Remember, he's only 25. When you're trying to do that, I will never denigrate. I will always support, and I'll always say good luck to you and try to get that done. Go ahead.
And the other thing on the long-term part, which is why I will disagree with the last caller on that part, is, you know, first of all, it's been long enough that I personally am completely over the shock of Kyrie asking to be, you know, traded and all that stuff. In terms of his legacy and things like that, you know, he'll have, I believe, his chances too in this whole thing, because this year it's still the Cavs because you still have LeBron. That's something that, again, as I've thought about this too over the not even 24 hours since this happened, that, yeah, it's in general talent for 2017-2018 only, it's still borders on wash. And if we're talking that, then that makes the Cavs still favored and higher than Boston.
No question.
But longer
nothing
term.
Nothing changed in Vegas.
Right.
Nothing changed in terms of
precisely. Yeah. The odds for both Cavs and Celtics are exactly what they were this time yesterday before this trade came out. But longer term, especially in the probable scenario of LeBron gone after this year, Boston's in a much better place now to be the power in the Eastern Conference. Because, here's what I mean by that.
Remember, they've only got five guys, four from last year's team plus Kyrie. They got seven guys they've got to replace.
Now and that's very true, and they still have not just their own, but they still have Lakers picks. They still have some of these younger guys from last year and this year they're bringing in. But what I find interesting, even though they traded away some defensive, nice role players, again, Crowder to the Cavs and Avery Bradley, of course, not too terribly long ago to the Detroit Pistons, but remember, Isaiah's a free agent coming off his lower deal. All the rumors are that he's going to want a max deal, right?
Yes.
Kyrie is not fully there. Gordon Hayward kind of is. In other words, your top two scoring pieces for Boston, unlike a scenario with Isaiah Thomas, that's all inked and done. So you have, if you're Boston for beyond this coming season, you have the core type guys in place. Now you need to keep filling in some of those other players. And in a LeBron's not in Cleveland and assuming he goes out west scenario, then that's when, okay, now it's prove it time from the Kyrie legacy point of view, because his team would be the probable top team then in the Eastern Conference after that. I basically what I'm saying is there's a little more structure and one less question for Boston, and that was the Isaiah Thomas, do they give him a max? Now, well, they don't have to worry about that question. Their two top players now, Kyrie Irving, Gordon Hayward, are signed for multiple years, and that's going to help them in the future, you know, down the line, longer-term scenario. Shorter-term, it's borders on a wash at best from a Celtics point of view, and that means Cavs still win. As I've said, since free agency was...
Let me get Daniel in Perrysburg.
Yeah, go ahead.
Daniel in Perrysburg, you're on ESPN 106.5. The ticket, go right ahead.
Hey, gentlemen, how you doing today?
Good. What's on your mind?
Good. Just wanted to weigh in on this real quick. Obviously a blockbuster, and just listening to what you were saying, Bob, about Kyrie and the potential that he has. First off, I'm a pro Kyrie guy. As a Cavs fan since basically the 80s. He has proven and done anything and everything he's needed to for Cleveland. I don't think any Cleveland sports fan should be mad at him for wanting to leave. A little precarious in that he requested a trade, but he has the right to do that, and I don't begrudge him for that, especially considering everything he's done. He signed on when Cleveland was not a very good team before LeBron came here. So I give him props for that. As far as the comparisons to what Curry has done and what Russell Westbrook has done, I don't know that I find those to be quite as parallel. You know, Curry did win a championship as a shoot first point guard for sure, but understand that he was surrounded with an amazingly complete team, and he did that. And if you recall, Cleveland actually shut him down, but he had a very lackluster finals for really 2 years in a row. He was not the MVP for either one of those championships. So we have to keep that in mind. And then when you consider Westbrook is a complete player.
That actually makes my point a little bit more for me, is that Curry is viewed as a champion and a two-time MVP, if not for the finals, at least for the league, the two-time MVP. And Kyrie is thinking, man, I've got none of the above. I mean, it's got a title.
Oh yeah, for sure.
LeBron's title, and he probably figures if I go and surround myself with the right pieces, like Curry did, I don't even have to be great. Curry wasn't, but look where he was, or look what
sure.
He's accomplished. He feels like it's within his reach.
And I understand that from Irving's perspective.
Yeah,
to that end, I agree. But I was more talking about it from, like, say, your perspective of someone saying I understand. Or saying that, you know, he could definitely be the MVP of the league. I think it's possible. It's possible. But understand, too, that, you know, for Westbrook, for instance, he hasn't won a title. And he was MVP of the league, but he had to average a triple-double to do that. I do not see Kyrie doing that, for one. He's just not the rebounder, and he's not the assist guy.
Hold on. Go ahead. I don't think he has to average a triple-double to do that. Russell Westbrook kind of needed to, I think. But there was a different scenario because of the whole Durant story. Kyrie,
right.
I think, you know, he averaged, what, 25.9 points or 25.6 points, a career high this year. That's with
right.
LeBron still being the first guy. I
sure.
think if he gets the opportunity to do things his way with a willing secondary partner like Gordon Hayward, as opposed to a primary partner like LeBron James, I think that could easily be a 29 or 30-point a game score. And if he does that and still keeps his assists at around 6 a game, I don't think he needs a triple-double to win the MVP. I think you could, and if he's on a team that wins 55 games, I think he could easily do that, and I think he's got that capability.
And he's very, very gifted, but those are a lot of ifs. I mean, the fact that obviously the turnover on that team is enormous. It's going to take a while for them. But I think the Celtics are clearly playing the long game here. I mean, let's be honest. Not a lot of teams think they're going to compete with Golden State this year or next year, other than maybe the Cavs. And when you look at that, Boston is playing the long game. In 2, 3, 4 years, when the Warriors maybe aren't perched atop that, you know, with really good pieces in place with Irving and Hayward, and the building that they'll do between now and then. I believe that they are more looking forward to 2 or 3 years from now versus how close are we to the Cavs this year.
Yeah, I you know what? That's a very good point. They are playing the long. And I got to run here, Dan. I'm already way late for my Sports Center, so thank you. But you're 100% right about that. They are indeed playing a long game. So let's clarify, and I think we kind of did, or at least I tried to, the fact that the Cavaliers, I think, are still the favorites to win this thing this year. Long term, it might be in the Celtics' favor, depending on what happens with Isaiah and of course, who that pick turns out to be. Okay, let me get that SportsCenter timeout after I remind you once again, though, about Buffalo Wild Wings and your fantasy football draft party. Have you scheduled it yet? Look, if you're the commissioner, you're under pressure. You want to make a good first impression. You want your league to be first class, right? Well, that starts with booking your draft party at B-Dubs. Why? You get a free draft kit along with a special draft feast for your owners. Boneless wings, 3 sides, 3 shareables, all at a very special price to feed your whole league. So come on in to start your fantasy football season right at Buffalo Wild Wings at participating locations and while supplies last. And also, don't forget, no matter what day of the week it is, your B-Dubs Fast Break Lunch menu gives you all the highlights from the regular menu, but at discounted prices every Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. That's at Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, sports. Right back after this.
Back to Bob France, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Yeah. We spent a whole hell of a lot of time on the trade today, which is obviously it's a blockbuster, so it's worth our time. But what we did not do was spend any time on announcing what could be outstanding news for Toledo Central Catholic product Deshaun Kizer, who's going to start preseason game number 3, which is the dress rehearsal game, which means he could very well be in line to start his first game ever in the National Football League when his rookie season opens up against the Steelers coming up.
Now, we should stress, Bob,
I got to tell you, I don't necessarily like the idea of it because, as I explained to Scott Petrak and Dennis Perloff and some of our Browns writer guests, I think learning from, not from Osweiler, but by watching Osweiler take his lumps for the Browns right now, it might be better long-term for Deshaun Kizer. But having said that, I am so happy for him because it is such a tremendous opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely. And we should technically stress the part that, we're not 100% sure. Hugh Jackson did not officially say he would start the opener against the Steelers on the 10th of September, but he did indicate and has been indicating this whole time that that very well it probably could happen.
Two things that he said. Number one, he said he wants to put this whole thing to bed by Wednesday.
Right.
That's today.
That's today.
Today, he announces Deshaun Kizer will start preseason game number 3.
Mm-hmm.
You add those two little factors to the fact that the preseason game, as we say, number 3, is the dress rehearsal. That's when the starters will play maybe the whole first half.
Right.
For most teams, they'll play the whole first half, ones against ones. Well, guess who the starter is? Guess who's playing with the ones against ones?
Yeah.
It's not Brock Osweiler. It is Deshaun Kizer. And unless he falls flat on his face, Kush.
Or, God forbid, gets hurt.
Or gets hurt, of course. All things being, considered, I think this means he's going to start game one.
Oh, I absolutely think he is, too. I'm just, for technicality's sake, throwing out that officially was not said. But most likely, that's what's going to happen. By the way, here's Kizer, his thoughts on that from earlier today.
This is awesome. Obviously, another step in this process that we've been talking about for the last couple months now. Obviously, know that there's a lot of responsibility that comes along with starting the game as far as preparation goes throughout the week, as far as the, responsibilities that happen off the field and representing this team the right way. But, as awesome as it is, it just means I have to work harder and try to do whatever I can to continue to have some success out on the field and hold on to this position as tight as I can.
So he's saying the right things, of course, too, and this is going to be so much fun to watch over. It really, really is.
Absolutely. And I cannot wait to see that for third. I want to see him with the ones. I want to see him with that. What they said is, what Hugh Jackson and others have said is, he has absorbed the Browns playbook so much faster than anybody thought he would or could. And what a testament that is to his intelligence, his football IQ, his ability to study, his willingness to
that
do
sounds
all
like
of that.
A mature guy there, huh, Brian Kelly?
Thank you. That's another great point. All of that stuff, that Johnny Manziel, for example, was unwilling to do, that extra work studying in the film room, Deshaun Kizer soaks it in and now could very well be the starting quarterback on day number one for the Browns. So that's where we'll leave it. Great stuff. Guess what? We got Drive Time coming your way next, so stay where you are. We'll talk to you tomorrow afternoon.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.